So I'm a big 80s rock girl. Mm-hmm. And do you remember the song, Love in an Elevator? Remember that song?
No.
I think it's Aerosmith. Well, Kelsey, look it up. And there was this badass video vixen in an elevator just called, her name was Brandy Brandt. And I loved it. So Brandy's named after a hot video vixen.
Which
I love that.
Okay, I love
she
that.
She does. Like, she'll tell it all the time. Aerosmith, yeah.
Wasn't it your dream to be a video vixen?
Yes.
Okay, so this is all connecting.
It's all connecting.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Tea Time with Raven and Miranda. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Happy gobble.
Literally Thursday Thanksgiving. I hope everyone is having fun and watching us instead of eating. You're taking a break from eating right now. Today on the podcast, we have someone who is pretty impressive. When I first met her, I have to say, I was instantly like, I want to be your friend. I want to know you. You're cool. You're cute. You're funny. You have...
Super cute.
You're a mom. You give me those vibes, too. You guys, it's Tish Cyrus.
Tish!
The mama on Thanksgiving.
There she is. Tish, what do you do for Thanksgiving?
You know what? I miss it when everybody's in town because it used to be so much fun because all the kids would be home. Mm. And so now that they're older, we never know who's coming in. But we always kind of have a Friendsgiving.
Nice.
So we have so many friends that are from out of town and that their families aren't here. Mm-hmm. So usually it's a lot of our family and then everybody's friend.
I love that.
So it's really fun.
And are you cooking or do you cater?
So Molly usually caters for me because she likes really healthy food.
Okay.
And then I'll make some like real Southern cooking.
Thank you. I want to get into that. Yes. What are we eating, Tish?
I mean, it's a little basic, but I feel like it's like mashed potatoes with lots of butter.
Mm. Yes.
Like lots of butter.
Okay.
And you know what? I'm a stovetop stuffing girl.
You're a stovetop?
And everybody's like, are you really making stovetop? But it is like, there is nothing that tastes like it. I love stovetop. And that's why Molly's catering.
Okay, wait, yeah. Stovetop, yeah. Are you doctoring it or are you doing it as the box requires?
You know what? I will doctor it a little and do like onions and celery in it.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, but there's something about the seasoning of the stovetop that I love.
That's hilarious. So you're a stuffing, not a dressing.
I'm a stuffing.
I'm a dressing.
You have to.
Wait, is there a difference?
Yes.
Oh.
Well, stuffing goes in the bird. Dressing is outside of the
bird. Oh, I'm a dressing.
I'm a stuffing. See, I want to eat the dressing that is stuffed in the bird that then gets to cook in the juices that is then extra, deliciousness. And all I care about on Thanksgiving is the stuffing and the cranberry. That's all I need on my plate.
I'm kind of like that too, but I need mashed potatoes and stuffing.
Butter.
Okay, and I also really, really like Pillsbury biscuits.
Because they're delicious.
Because they are the
best. They're the best.
Yeah, period. Those are good.
Yeah.
When it comes to stuffing, though, I have a recipe. I do a cornbread stuffing. I make this every year. It is my thing. It is delicious. You have to
gluten-free.
Have it. Yes, I do it gluten-free now.
Wow.
So it's a little bit healthier than because I don't use all the butter that it calls for. But it's so good.
Mine is dressing. I've been making my grandma's dressing since I learned how to make it. Toasted wheat bread, all of the gizzards, all of the love and butter and juices from the turkey. But there is a flavor profile to dressing that's different than stuffing. To me, stuffing gets a little bit salty. And for me, dressing is like a pudding. That, you know what I mean?
But
you'll be able to talk soon, we promise.
Okay, but it's about food. Do you guys have lots of people come over or is it just you guys or?
So we are actually in conversations about that leading up to Thanksgiving.
No, it is Thanksgiving today.
So we were in a lot of conversations about that leading up to Thanksgiving. And the conversation was about tradition. Do we go to my mom's house? Do we go to her mom's house? But we're a married couple. When do we start our tradition? What does that look like? Yeah. So we are having an open door policy, Friendsgiving type, small, bring your own food. I'll make the dressing. She'll make the
stuffing. Love that.
Yeah.
Absolutely love that.
It's also, I feel like we work during the week. So Thursday, it's just hard. You know what I mean? Because it feels like it just goes so quickly that to travel to friends and family.
Did you have to start a new tradition now that your kids are gone? Or grown up, I should say.
We kind of do the same, but we just, it's kind of like you guys, like open door,
yeah.
You know, whoever wants to show up, but we definitely always do it at my house.
Okay.
And like this year, like three of my kids won't be here. Oh, wait. So this year, three of my kids aren't here.
So hey. We'll come. We'll come yes. over to you.
So, but, you know, we always, I love Thanksgiving. It's I actually think I like it as much as Christmas.
That's fair. Is it because of the food?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for taking yourself away from your Thanksgiving spread to be here on this podcast. And I want to ask you something about your kids. You have five kids.
Yes, I do.
So which one is your favorite for real?
You know what? I heard someone say, and I think this is absolutely true, there's always a different one according to what's going on.
I think like, you heard Kris Jenner say that.
Is that who said it?
I think so.
But it is actually true.
Yeah?
It's like, that always changes.
So makes you're sense? Going to a concert. Who are you bringing?
If I'm going to a concert, I usually do bring Molly.
If you're going to go hunting, who are you bringing?
Oh, hunting.
Do you hunt?
No.
Well,
but I would probably.
As a mom, you should know these answers.
Who would I bring hypothetically? Hunting? Maybe Brandy. She's very outdoorsy.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I can get that.
You're going. That you're going to the outlet, but it's Restoration Hardware.
Oh.
Who are
shoot.
You bringing?
Noah. She loves Restoration Hardware.
Okay, yeah. okay.
Yeah. That's fun. We're trying to get these boys in here. Where are you taking the boys?
The boys, me like, and Trace, true. We love to go get tattoos.
Okay.
Yeah, love yeah. a good tattoo. And then with Brazen, literally, what would me and Brazen do? He loves to play me his music. So maybe we'd go to the studio.
Okay. That yeah. fun. I like that.
Yeah.
Where did you get all your names from?
let's see, with Molly, so her real name's Destiny Hope, which is so funny.
Destiny Hope?
That's her real name.
I had no idea. Yes. Okay, amazing.
And Billy Ray came up with that, not me. But she always smiled when she was little, so we would call her Smiley Molly, and it just evolved into Molly.
Wow.
That's cute.
And then with Noah, I remember years and years and years and years ago, I actually don't even know who this is, but I remember seeing a girl named Noah Kelly. And it was on something, and I was like, I have never heard that name for a girl before. And I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I came up with Noah. And then someone eventually told me that Noah, the girl, was actually the first girl in the Bible to ever receive an inheritance.
There was a Noah girl in the Bible?
Before the ark.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know, but
there's always a female first.
Yes, there
always
is.
That's Bible.
That's crazy. I yep. didn't know that.
Okay.
You guys are going to die when I tell you about Brandy.
Brandy wine.
So I'm a big 80s rock girl. Mm-hmm. And do you remember the song, Loving an Elevator? Remember that song?
No.
I think it's Aerosmith. Well, Kelsey, look it up. And there was this badass video vixen in an elevator just going. Her name was Brandy Brandt. And
oh,
I loved it. So Brandy's named after a hot video vixen.
Which
I love that.
Okay, I love
she
that.
She does. Like, she'll tell it all the time. Aerosmith, yeah.
Wasn't it your dream to be a video vixen?
Yes.
Okay, so this is all connecting.
It's all connecting. Brazen, Billy Ray came up with that because I forget what was happening, but it was on an airplane and it wasn't going great. And they were landing on some gravel runway in a different country. And he was like, he's going to be like his dad and take Brazen chances.
Oh,
and
that's
literally
cool.
His name is Brazen Chance.
Oh, that's cool.
And Trace, I just loved that name. I don't even remember how I got the name Trace.
What's
but
his
I had
middle name?
Always Dempsey after my mom's brother.
Trace Dempsey.
That's- yeah.
That's
These
beautiful.
Are good names.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I always think about just how we end up with our names and if our names fit us and you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like it's
totally.
An interesting thing because like Miranda for me, I don't see myself with another name, but I don't necessarily feel like a Miranda.
Really? I feel like you are.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know what even a Miranda is.
You.
Me.
Yeah, you.
I also call her Vera sometimes, which
That's
is her middle,
my middle name.
Name. Sometimes she pulls out the Vera in her and I'm like, "Oh, Vera."
Miranda, okay, I can see that.
Miranda Vera Mayday. It's a good name. I like it. I like the sound of it, but I'm just kind of like, you know. Do you like Raven, Simone, Christina, Pierman, Mayday?
That's all of my names. Every name is hyphenated except for my middle. Yes and no.
Wait, how many was that?
Raven Simone, which is technically one name because it's hyphenated.
Name. Okay.
Christina is my middle name.
Okay.
And then Pierman Mayday is my last name, hyphenated.
Because we, when we got married, hyphenated our names. Yeah.
I actually, I'm going to be honest, sometimes I have a problem when people call me Raven. I tend to like trigger me a little bit from my time being called Raven.
Yes.
all that time. And then sometimes people call me Chris because my middle name is Christina. My friends will do that. Like if we're in a big open area and there's a lot of people, I'll be like, do not call me Raven in public. Call me Chris. And then I have other nicknames. But my name has been so used that I just kind of dissociate from my name.
I understand that.
Dissociate from my name, yeah.
So really, when you were younger, did they call you Raven Simone?
People did. My parents didn't. I was always Ray. My brother called me Reva. My mom called me Ray. You know what I mean? That was
Ray's easy.
It rolls. I like that.
Yeah.
What about you with your name?
Okay, so my mom, I mean, like, we're from Eastern Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Like, she is not fancy. Okay. But she thought she was for some reason. My name's Letitia.
Just throw it.
And
Letitia is over the hat.
Okay. Letitia.
Letitia is my name.
Letitia, honey, that is such
great. Okay, but the funny thing is because everybody is like, Letitia. But my mom was very hilarious, Eastern Kentucky. She named me, like, Leticia after a French model.
Hilarious.
And I'm like, Mom, that did not, that didn't go well. Nobody's thinking that.
Yeah.
But legally, I changed my name to Tish because everybody just always called me Tish.
Leticia is actually, and Letitia is actually giving me, like, Spanish.
Yeah.
More than anything.
We knew a Spanish Letitia. Yeah. That's why.
Really?
Yeah. Leticia.
Yeah. Yeah, but nobody ever says Leticia.
No.
No. Yeah. Except for us. We're going to call you Leticia for the entire...
I mean, that could be your alter ego, your video vixen self.
And the funny thing is like people try to give me, like, some people called me Laddie in school for Letitia, which was weird. And then my mom then decided she was going to walk me into school every year and tell everybody that I was to be called Letitia or Letizia. There was no Tish or Laddies or any of that. She wanted me to be called by my name.
Dang. No choice. She's a really strong mom.
She really was.
Did you take on those qualities?
I think I did in different ways. Yeah, I think I really did. I feel like there's so much more of her in me now. I'm like, oh my gosh, it was just my mother. And even my kids will go like, that was so mammy. Oh, my gosh. And I'm like, I know, but it's just happening.
We all just become our moms, I think.
We do.
We try and avoid it, and then it just happens.
It totally happens.
All right, here we go.
But she was great, so.
What was your childhood like, your upbringing?
Magical.
Hmm.
Yeah. And I'm adopted. Yeah. We don't talk about that a lot, but I'm adopted. My parents adopted me when I was an infant.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love
this. And... honestly, I just cannot even explain to you the amount of love that I got from my mom and dad. Like, they, because my mom couldn't have kids, I was just their everything.
So you were only child?
I was the only child.
Wow.
I know you don't talk about it a lot, but I'm very intrigued because adoption stories, they run the gamut.
They do.
And... you are one of the few people that have come into our presence and said how amazing their life is. Did you ever come to a point where you wanted to meet your real parents?
I did.
Birth
parents. Now, I'm going to save that when I write my book.
Oh, yeah.
I'm writing the whole story too.
Yeah.
But you, after, like, when I tell you the story of finding my birth parents, which I did, it's the most insane story ever.
I'll let you have that in your book.
Yes.
I understand. I appreciate you talking about it. What was it like being adopted and going to school?
You know what? My mom, they told me when I was really young. Like, I feel like I was like 4 or 5 years old when they set me down because my mom said I didn't ever want to wait till you were older because I didn't want it to make it this big, huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wanted to tell you when you were super young so it was just a part of you and you knew, but it wasn't some, you know, big deal. Like, we were setting you down to tell you something crazy. And she always put the spin on it of, like, we wanted you so bad.
Mm.
Like... it makes me want to cry. I lost my mom during COVID, and it's awful.
Recent.
Yeah, it's too recent. But, like, she always was just like, you know, so many people get pregnant, and they're not ready for that, or, you know, some people don't want to have a baby, or do, like, and she would just always say, like, we wanted you so bad, and like you made our lives. And so I never thought of it in a negative way ever. I always just thought of it in such a positive way of like, that stuck with me, like how much they wanted me. And it was amazing.
I love that. That's so beautiful.
You're adopted when you're young. Mm-hmm. Your parents sit you down at 3 or 4. Do you think that you would have ever known you were adopted?
Probably not.
Okay, right? Like, did they need to actually do that?
Probably not. And the weird thing, the funny thing with my mom, she very strong. Like, we kind of, I mean, after she told me or whatever, it wasn't ever something that any of us ever brought up. Mm. And, like, if I even did bring it up, you know, like, I could tell it hurt. Like, she didn't even want to talk about me having, you know, possibly another mom or dad or whatever. And so it was kind of, like, not talked about as I got older at all, really. But I lived in such a small town in Kentucky, like, tiny. There's no way I would have ever known. And I looked so much like my mom.
That was going to be my question about seeing yourself in your parents.
Yeah.
And how that translated into your desire to have kids. And I ask that, or I'm curious about that, because my best friend is adopted, and she looks like she could have been her mom's baby, but not at all her father. And if you look at her parents together, you go, okay, there's no way that those two people would have made this baby.
Really?
Yeah. Because she's extremely fair and blonde, blue eyes, looks like she could be our sister.
Yeah.
And her father is Lebanese. So there's just no way the coloring would have not shown up some way in her. When she got ready to have her first baby, it was such a huge emotional roller coaster for her, but this was the first time she'd ever seen a blood relative. Her child was that. Because, you know, and so just that thought process, did that impact you in having kids at all?
No. And I don't think I ever really thought about that in that way.
Interesting.
That's so wild. Yeah, to think about that's the first time she saw her blood relative.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Because she met her birth parents after.
So crazy. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I'd already had 3 kids by the time I met them and saw who they were. Yeah. But I kind of looked like both my mom and my dad, my adoptive parents. Mm-hmm. My dad had kind of big blue eyes, and so did my mom. And so I feel like I was built like my dad. Mm-hmm. And so, I never really thought about it.
Yeah.
And people would always, and my mom would beam when somebody would say, you look just like your mom.
Aww.
You know?
Yeah.
And people told Miley all the time, oh my God, you look like your mom and your grandmother. And my mother would just like beam. Like it was so sweet. And Miley, they were very close. She has a huge portrait of my mom on her arm.
Aww.
And it just cracks me up because, again, we're from Eastern Kentucky. Like, we, you know, and my mom's got this big updo, like some fabulous wig that she's wearing. She was way more of the stage mom for Miley than I was. She went to Hannah Montana every single solitary day that Miley was ever on that, Monday through Friday. Every single solitary day.
Oh, wow.
Did not miss one.
Do you consider yourself a stage mom?
Not at all.
No?
No.
Gosh, you don't get that vibe.
I'm not that. I'm really, like, I hate being on set bored.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
I am not a stage mom.
No, she's a video vixen, babe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Girl, what are you talking about?
There you
about?
Go.
She's a straight video vixen.
She's Leticia. My apologies.
Get there.
Okay, so Tish, something that I'm fascinated by is the parents of famous kids,
yes,
especially when the kids start young,
yes,
and how these babies or young children end up in the industry. And I don't, and this is not a judgment based anything because I don't know these answers. Did you sometimes, okay, it's hard for me to believe that when a baby is, let's say, like Raven's age, right, 16 months old or something like that, that they're showing signs of wanting this. Because a lot of times you hear parents say like, oh, this is all they wanted. They were singing and dancing and moving and grooving. Okay, but when you're 16 months old, you're not really doing much of anything. It's hard to say that a baby would have
expressed that. So she's not judging
that.
You, Tish. She's judging me.
Yes. Yes, she is.
No, I'm judging my parent-in-laws.
Literally.
No. I'm just saying, because even at that point, I think what happens like in Raven's instance is, or Ashley and Mary-Kate's instance, is they got full house because they didn't cry. And there was two of them.
Right.
So they could swap the babies out.
And I got Cosby Show because I was funny.
And there you go. I mean, and adorable.
And the cutest thing ever. So,
same.
Yeah.
So what did you see in your kids that led you to know, like, this is in, because they all are in
it. It's so insane.
They're all in it.
Every single one.
And obviously, Billy Ray.
Yep.
What did you feed them as kids?
I mean, it's
Did you breastfeed them?
I'm just like, maybe because, like, it is different for us because Billy Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of, like, that's the only life they knew, I think. And it kind of, it really, honestly, I never thought Molly was going to be doing what she's doing. Like, we were into competition cheerleading. I was the best cheer mom ever. I was the one, T-E-E-N-N-E, you know, I'm like in the, like, I care only about cheerleading.
Yeah.
But Billy Ray did a show called Doc in Canada, and we were there for like 4 years. And there was a little boy named Tyler Posey who actually was ended up being Teen Wolf. But he played little boy in Doc.
Okay.
And so they ended up asking if Molly would want to play his like best friend. And so because we were just there.
Mm-hmm.
And so Billy Ray, of course, was like from Tennessee and the whole thing. And so Molly ended up playing Kylie in a couple episodes on this show. And that's where she kind of got the bug. Then she wanted to take some acting classes. So while we were in Toronto with absolutely nothing to do, Molly started taking acting lessons. And the other thing is like we didn't plan on Molly auditioning and stuff. I have a really good friend that has two kids that will have been in the business forever. And they would drive from Tennessee to California every single solitary pilot season and be here for a couple months during pilot season. And Molly wanted to come to L.A. She just loved the thought of L.A., not acting at all. So Wendy was like, if you don't care, like, I'll take her for the summer and she can hang with the kids and whatever. And so we did that. And they always went into their agent when they first got down to remind them that they're here from Tennessee and they want to go out and all this stuff. And one of the agents, her name was Margot Clark, and she literally was like, who is this wonderful child?
Mm.
And Wendy was like, oh, it's my friend's daughter. She's just hanging for the summer. And she was like, oh, no. Like, I need to send her out.
Got it.
And so she auditioned for Shark Boy Lava Girl.
Yeah.
And got down to like four. And did not get it and came home. We went right back to cheering. And then like 6 months later, they called about Hannah Montana.
Wow.
That's epic.
That's crazy.
As you tell that story, just so you know, I'm scanning you. I'm scanning you from all of my history of parents and in the industry. And what I cannot find is a jealous bone towards your kids.
That makes me want to cry because...
I can't find it. And I'm listening. I'm listening hard.
I don't know why Molly said this, but she called me like 3 days ago and she goes, Mommy, thanks for you never being jealous of me or stealing all my money. And I was like, oh, you're welcome.
No, you're not, she's not one of those moms, which is really rare.
Really?
And there's, and even the moms that show up that put on, there's still a little bit of them that's either jealous that their child has overcome personal triggers or just adulthood or financial. But there's, I find it interesting. You do not have a jealous bone in your body.
I don't.
Towards your kids.
At all.
That's amazing.
No, not toward my kids in any way.
I can see it towards other bitches. Like, that's fair.
Oh, totally.
Oh, damn. But like,
all the video makes it.
This looks great. And I'm jealous as hell that I'm too scared to do it. And I applaud you for
it.
That's
how I am, Tish.
I'm like, holy crap.
You don't need shit.
I do. I need this.
No.
But I'm so scared. I just don't think I could do it.
We should do it together.
What if it, like, does something weird?
Also, Tish, you have the access to, like, get the best of the best of the best.
I
you don't
know,
have to be scared.
But one of the best told me that there's always, always, no matter who does it, a chance that, like, a nerve doesn't come back right, and then you have this. And I'm just like,
I still got nerve damage in my lip from getting one of my my back teeth taken out.
Oh, I remember when I got mine taken out, they said that was possible.
And I still have to, like, yeah,
really?
I do.
Well, we all did it anyway, and we're here, so I think we can do our little neck lifts.
Listen, no, we're not doing... Listen, I'm going back to giving you praises.
Okay.
I just find it interesting, because you have birthed celebrities and have been... with celebrities, that to find your own path in this world, and this is going to sound backhanded, but it's not, right? you finding your path in this world, you're not as big as your daughter. Do you know what I mean?
No.
But at the same time, you're so comfortable in yourself. And you have, when you tell the story of your kids, you're talking to us like they're your children and not your product. And I'm not used to that. Mm-hmm. And it's really beautiful. It's really beautiful. And I hope you never, ever change.
Me too, because that's so not us.
You know,
you can't change now, though. You can't. You're too far in it to, all of a sudden shift. But I have a question. When you were a little girl, Tish, and you were thinking about, this is what I want to do when I grow up, what was that?
Video vixen.
Video vixen. Okay. So, I was like, okay, that could be legit.
It was always something like that, though. Like, I feel like I remember wanting to be a Rockette. Mm. Or, like, my mom, like I said, like, my mom, because I think, like, I was just her whole world. She had me in ballet and tap and acrobats and gym or jazz and all these things. And so I always loved to dance. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was probably something to do with that. That's what. And then, you know, at 19, I got pregnant with Brandy, which wasn't, you know, a planned pregnancy. But and then I was just became a mom. Mm-hmm. And like I didn't go that route. I was actually going to school to be a stewardess at the airline.
I can see that for you.
Now I'm terrified to fly. I mean, it's like insane. But those were the couple things that I actually wanted to do. And then when Molly got Hannah, I had no idea what the heck we were doing. Mm-hmm. And all I knew is that, like, Billy Ray had been in Toronto for 4 years doing Doc.
How did you and Billy Ray meet?
I'm from the same hometown.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Same hometown. And I was like, how do I now not separate our family? Because we'd been in Toronto, and Brandy and Trace, they all end up going to school in Toronto for a minute. Then SARS broke out. I don't know if y'all remember
SARS. My God, remember SARS? Oh my God.
Yes.
It was the original COVID.
It was the original COVID.
I remember that.
And it was crazy up in Toronto. It was really crazy. So I was driving back and forth to Nashville, and it was a nightmare. And so when Molly got Hannah, I was like, I am not doing this again with our family. So I just picked everybody up and moved, including my mom. And we all moved out here together.
Wow.
And
you're glue. You kept everybody together.
I did do that.
I think that in also reading you and kind of spinning off of what you're saying, babe, because obviously Raven knows this world super well from her own personal experience, and then also from growing up directing, being around kids who have their parents there, you've really been in it. I think that this is, and why I say it'll never change for you, is because it has to do with your spirit. Mm-hmm. Number one is like, it's just who your being is, the not seeming jealous, because the fact that you even had aspirations to want to be a performer or a dancer then to see your kids go on and do it, there are people and personalities who would have resentments towards their children, who would feel like they have to then live vicariously through them.
You don't have that, dude.
I mean, listen, behind closed doors, we might not know what we're talking about.
She doesn't.
Yeah.
And I think by the time we moved out here and I was older, like, I think I was probably about 37 when we moved to L.A., mm-hmm. I was just a mom by that point. Like,
I
had five kids.
Yeah.
And that's all I did. So also just, you know, it was so important for me, maybe because my mom, like, I was glued to her hip because I was her whole world. And I mean, some of the times I feel like people will probably think that's a bad thing. Somehow for me, it wasn't. And that's kind of how the kids were for me, is like, I didn't want somebody else taking care of the kids. And I didn't want to go on like the Cheetah Girls tour with Molly and leave my other kids at home with a nanny. Mm-hmm. But yet I'm like, also like, do I uproot them? It was hard to make those decisions, but every time, like when Molly would tour, I took them with me, Brazen and Noah, because they were so much younger. Brandy and Trace could make their own decisions, like they wanted to stay in school or they wanted to come. But with Noah and Brazen, I always had them on the road, and they'd have a tutor.
Mm-hmm.
But I did keep them all together, and I think that was really good for Molly, too.
Yeah, that's grounding.
It's grounding.
And having your family with you. So how has it been for you now that all your kids are grown and kind of out there?
Girl.
And you're, right?
Yeah, because
you don't have
them
on your hip.
I'm sad.
I bet. Yeah.
Yeah, I miss my kids that are in Nashville a lot. And we've talked a little bit about it. Like, it's been the last few years, I think it's hit me even more because they're just getting so much older.
Yeah.
But how old is your oldest?
My oldest is 38.
My age. Brandy, right?
Yeah, Brandy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, and I'm lucky that Noah and Miley both live very close to me. Mm-hmm. So I see one of them probably every day, which is really, really nice because I see people whose kids go off to college and they're in another state and they don't have any of their kids around. So I'm really fortunate that I do have that because, I don't know what I'd do without them because, honestly, with five kids, you have to be in it.
Yeah.
And I don't think I took the time to make a lot of friends in L.A. because I was just raising kids.
Yeah. And it's probably for the better.
Maybe. But now I'm like...
lonely a little bit. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. It's like in listening to you talk, I was like, okay, you at 19 got pregnant, went into mom mode and basically never stopped. And now all of a sudden you're probably, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like you're in a place in your life where the birds have left the nest and you're kind of left to have to confront yourself. And when your identity becomes wrapped up in whatever it is that you're doing outside of yourself, being a parent, working, whatever it is, when that thing goes, it's kind of like, who am I? What am I doing?
I'm trying to figure it out.
How's it going?
Well, what I heard is that you rolled a blunt and figured it out.
I did do that. I had it really figured out for about 10 years.
With all those
blunts? And I was, like, happy. I was smoking. I was toking and having the best time of my life.
Good for you.
And I just started smoking a little bit again. Mm-hmm. I didn't smoke for, like, a year and a half. And
how's it going?
It was really hard at first, and now, like, I just maybe, like, a couple times a week I'll smoke at night, but honestly, I personally believe it was really good for me. It was really, like, a medicine for me, mm-hmm. And I would like to get back to that place at some point where I feel comfortable smoking again. It was giving me some anxiety, so mm-hmm. I stopped for over a year. But, like, kind of going through therapy and stuff, I realized that actually probably for when the kids moved out, when I lost my mom, when I went through a divorce, like, I was stoned. So it was all, mm-hmm. like, kind of okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, it also, the one thing do y'all talk about weed on this show? That's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I talk about shrooms.
Okay, great. So the thing I love about weed is you're kind of never bored. You know?
Yes, ma'am.
So
you always find something to do.
You always find something to do, and the time just, it's great. It's been hard for me the last year and a half without
it. I heard someone say that we are losing the ability to be bored, and that being bored is actually really important because what happens...
Don't listen to it.
Because what happens... do not listen to my highly avoidant wife who doesn't know how to be bored. When you learn how to be bored... what happens is you get confronted with thoughts. You start to hear things.
Why do I
and
want to
think
hear this?
Things. Because if you can be with yourself and you're comfortable with yourself and you can face all of those things, then, and you can overcome whatever that is or find peace in whatever that is, then you don't have the anticipatory anxiety of what tomorrow might bring, of what will happen if you don't have this stimulant. Then you're actually not dependent upon anything and you can find more ease in your life. Are you raising your hand over here?
As Jack says, let me play this devil's advocate real quick.
Okay.
I love everything my wife just said, and I agree to a point. The point that I stop agreeing is I think bored is the wrong word. I think it's being by oneself and one's thoughts, but you don't have to be bored to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You can be meditating while you do it. You can be painting while you do
yeah.
it. I just think that finding things to take up time because you don't want to be by yourself, I then would say 1,000% agree with you.
Well, this is what that person was speaking on, was how we overconsume and overstimulate ourselves to avoid being alone with our thoughts. And they were just using, I think, the simplest word that they could come across, which is boredom. And boredom just means that you are without stimulation.
And I
cannot be without stimulation.
I need stimulation.
I do too.
And I need stimulation even if it's meditating. Even if it's, you know, sitting and looking at how beautiful the hummingbird is. Like... to me, boredom is actually a bad symptom of not being able to be present in life
mm-hmm.
and thinking that life sucks and then I'm bored. It's like, no, why don't you look at your nails and look at your skin and look how your skin is made up of little triangles. The whole, like, I can find ways
to stimulate
myself in a positive way.
Now, can you do that without shrooms or weed?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Yes, I can.
Because that's the other thing I really like about weed
mm-hmm.
is, like, I'm like, oh, wow, yeah. Crazy, I go there and I get deeper and even like more spiritual in some ways. Mm-hmm. But without it, I have a really hard time being with my own thoughts.
Listen, I sense. Do too, because I always would say an idle mind is the devil's playground. And for me, I have really had to work hard as somebody who doesn't take pills and doesn't use any kind of substance, even though there are times for sure where I could have used them and benefited from them. I just have not found either my right cocktail, or I've been too afraid actually of the thing itself to try. I've had to work extremely hard to find a way to sit with all of the discomfort. I've gone through phases of my life where I'm like highly paranoid, where I was struggling to leave the house. When I left the house, it was a choice between, am I going to the grocery store or the dry cleaner? Because I only have tolerance for one, because everything is so overstimulating. My body felt like it was on fire. So it's really difficult. But I feel like it's the difference between continually absorbing things to avoid, because you know you're avoiding something, versus being able to, as you're saying, be present in a moment and find pleasure in the things that you're around without needing to go to the phone and just numb out in that way, or numb out in some way.
And I know I've smoked weed before, and like you, Tish, and my wife, kind of I got to a point where I couldn't smoke anymore. I started to get a little hallucinogenic in that world. It started to create anxiety. I was a little bit more paranoid than I needed to. It wasn't really good for my mental health. And then I moved to CBD. Mm-hmm. And that helped, because I would do a lot more CBD and then smoke, because what happens is when you separate the THC and the CBD from each other, which people tend to do because they're like, well, we have to find the strain. This is the highest, whatever. Right. The CBD actually helps balance all of those psychotropic things that might happen to you with weed. So I started doing that, but then I wasn't feeling good either. What I have a problem with is the constant anger that my body has held for all of these years. Mm-hmm. So I'm like this. And I thought weed calmed me, but what I really needed was a shroom, a microdose, to help just loosen it up, to say, speak.
I've been really wanting to try that.
Come over.
Totally. My son, Trace, he tells me this at all times. Like, Mom, you need to be microdosing shrooms. Mm-hmm. And he says it completely. He was very much like me. And I feel like maybe I've kind of grown out of the ADHD, but I definitely have that in me. He's mm-hmm. has that a lot too. He's always been very distracted. But he also a lot of anxiety, like you, like me, where, because mm-hmm. I mean, I can definitely lean into that agoraphobia pretty heavily, not want to leave the house, not want to travel, not want to do. My comfort is being at home. Mm-hmm. And Trace too. And when he started microdosing, and he's probably been doing it a year and a half, 2 years mm-hmm. now, he does not have anxiety at all.
Wow. Give me your hand. This is how I explain it. This is how I am. And then when I take it, it's just like this. It's literally just, and it's not, oh my God, the colors, none of that. I have to function in life. You know what I
totally.
Mean? I'm not doing this for recreational purposes. I'm doing this because I don't want to take a white pill from a pharmacist.
Which I'm taking now and it doesn't work.
Come talk to me. We'll talk about
yeah.
it. Because I think it will help.
Or there ends up becoming residual side effects
totally.
That then you are having to deal with. It's really hard.
Yeah.
It really is.
Now, I want to say, though, the white pill I'm taking now isn't working, but the white pill I used to take, which I talked about a lot, was Lexapro. Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. that worked.
Big fan. Now, I took it for 25 years.
Oh, wow. Nice.
It worked a long time. And I was completely not anxious for 25 years, and then all of a sudden, bam, it wasn't working. Mm. But I don't want people to think I'm totally against meds. I'm not. If the med's working, I'm
taking. Do you? I agree. I'm not against meds at all. I think they save lives.
They do.
And I think that for so many people, it truly is the biggest blessing. But then for others, I think what happens, though, is when things eventually do stop working, or your body adjusts, or you go through some hormonal shift. I mean, I've even realized now, as I'm 38 years old, how my body's changed, how certain things that I used to respond to very quickly are no longer working. My hormonal chemistry is changing. As we get older, things just shift and adjust. And it's then difficult because then you're trying to find your new cocktail, and those periods of time can be extremely difficult. And for me, as somebody, again, who hasn't taken stuff, I've had to figure out ways to self-regulate, and it's extremely difficult. And I had a lot of things working against me in my experience because I also was dealing with an eating disorder. So when I was highly malnourished and also then trying to function and also exercising, what I didn't understand was my body was running probably on nothing but adrenaline. And any bit of anxiety I had was going to be 100 times worse because I was so out of whack chemically.
Okay, we need to do like a three-part series on this or something, because do you think that the eating disorder was an actual eating disorder for the way you like wanted to look or whatever? Yeah. Or yours was?
Mine was, because mine started
What's the other version?
For me, well, when I'm anxious, it affects my stomach so bad. And here I go, just giving those news stories some fire.
We'll cut it out.
No, you don't have to cut it. Like, honestly, though, I literally was scary thin for a while last year. And, I mean, I was scared. Like, because I have so much baggage from watching my dad pass away. I was 19. Mm-hmm. He had cancer, feeding tubes. And, terrifying. So, for me, I just, when I'm that anxious, which was a lot last year, like,
can't eat.
Eating was so hard, and like, it scared me.
Yeah, I understand that side of things too. For me, my eating stuff started very young, and I think that it flip-flopped. So I think when it started really young, it was actually to manage being highly anxious and not even knowing at that age, because I was like seven, maybe between 7 and 10, what I was dealing with. So food was comfort and a way to soothe. And then as I got older, it manifested into physically, like I wanted to look a certain way. I went to a high school and all of a sudden these girls are so thin and beautiful. And I felt very much like I had to look like that to be worthy of being in my existence. So that happened. And then as I hit my 20s, it changed again because I had reached a point of also being so thin. I was scared by how thin I was. My anxiety was so bad. It was actually for the first time in my life hard to eat, which I'd never had an issue with that. I was always a binger. So I was like, oh my God, what is this, where I'm literally repulsed by food, can't keep things down. Yep. So that was a different experience. So I've had all sides of it, and I think that it's all connected. And what I've realized now, because I think that I'm kind of entering the healthiest era of my life, what I'm realizing is you have to eat well, you have to exercise well, and you have to exercise in the way that is appropriate to your body, because I'm doing classical Pilates, which is changing me. I've done posture restoration, which is changing me. And the combination of feeling safe and secure in my body has allowed me to feel like I can be safe and secure in the world.
You gave a look. Different way. Please tell me what you're thinking.
The working out. So before I started having so much anxiety about a year and a half ago, I was working out. I had never worked out. And then I started working out. I never liked it, but I did it. And then once I started getting anxiety, like I just, the thought of working out, I think honestly is part of my anxiety now. It's weird.
I get that though.
Really?
I do.
Like in the mornings I wake up and like, it's like this pressure to work out and I don't, but like every morning I know that I should. But the second I start thinking about it, because where I'm already kind of this, I just can't do it.
It's not right for right now. That's what that is to me, because I also had that where it either anything that felt like pressure or like it had to be done, I had an aversion to, because the fear of having anxiety within the thing was greater than my ability to understand that the action itself could help heal the anxiety. Then what started happening for me was I was would be working out and start having panic attacks within that. So I couldn't exercise publicly, because if I was in a gym or anything, it made me instantly nervous. So I had to exercise in a controlled environment in private. So it's But all of it
all
now.
All y'all need to do is take shrooms. Let me tell you something.
Right now. We also have to go to Raven's Crest.
Ladies.
We can offline
here's a
about
shot.
It.
We're going to offline about it because
here's
also,
a shot of tequila. Let's calm down.
What I will also say is like, freaking social media gives me anxiety because everything, because the phone listens to you, I guess.
Yeah.
Like everything on my feed is about being over 50 and how exercise is the most important thing to keep you young. And if you don't, you're going to be decrepit and all this. I am just like, holy crap, please stop.
I know.
Like,
I hear you.
It's like, I just don't even do it anymore. Like, I try not to look at it because I'm like, if one more person tells me I need to exercise, I'm going to lose it.
Well, so, let me just say this. That exercise, you can also start reframing it for yourself and what that looks like. Because exercise for you can be gentle movement for 5 minutes. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be you in a gym lifting weights for your bone density because you're a woman. It does take all of that noise and chatter away because honestly, the healthiest thing, the best anti-aging is when your system is regulated, when you are not stressed, when you're not in a constant state of flight or fright, when your cortisol isn't pumping through your body. When that is regulated, you're in perfect condition. You're in harmony.
So was your body dysregulated?
Fuck yes. Hell
yeah. And now you feel like it's regulated?
Much more regulated.
So there's hope for me.
Oh, yeah.
Because my nervous system is twacked out.
There, of course, is hope for you.
Twacked.
No. There's most definitely hope for you.
I'd like to ask a question to both of you.
Okay.
What brings you pleasure?
What brings you pleasure? Like, not that, like, just I want to be politically correct and say, you know, and all this is true. I freaking am obsessed with my husband and like
that's
I would
nice.
Latch on all the time and I'm obsessed being with my kids too.
But what's the real answer?
I love to work.
Yeah.
I love to work and it doesn't have to be like work, but like I've, you know, managed Miley with someone since she was 12, but also Miley's older and slowing down.
Yeah.
You know, like she
not Miley slowing down.
She's and you know, she's been very vocal about she's not going to tour. She doesn't enjoy that. And so, you know, we were either always on the road or traveling or doing those things. And like now Miley wants to live her life. And, you know, she's got a boyfriend that she's been with for a long time. She, you know, she just doesn't want to work all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but like coming today, like I was really excited to come today because I like enjoy doing this. I love doing my podcast. I just love working.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's because that's between being a mom, but I, you know, always had my kids with me when I was working. So it was like, I was always with Miley when she was little, always on the road, always doing things, being with Noah, she was starting her career. Like it's kind of all I've ever known since I think I went from honestly being barefoot and pregnant on a farm in Tennessee.
No way.
Yeah.
That's the name of your book.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. That's such a good
one. Because I really was. Like, we lived on a farm in the middle of nowhere, and, you know, I was popping kids out.
Yeah, to backstage and barefoot at Hannah Montana. Yeah.
Literally from one extreme to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of all I've known is being a mom and being that. And so now when both of those things are kind of, it's just, it's different. It's really hard. So for me, like, trying to figure out what I want to do.
Yeah, it's major.
It's pretty major.
Yeah.
And babes, what brings you pleasure?
What brings me pleasure? Well, I actually really resonate with what you said because I do find a lot of pleasure in work because purpose helps. And I think when you have a brain like ours, you need that. You need to throw yourself into something so you're not stuck up here.
Totally.
So productive work, like I love our podcast. I have so much fun producing it. I have so much fun just being in this world. I love my producers and, you know, so that's really wonderful. Pleasure, I mean, I love being with you. I love hanging out. I love watching a good show. The people around me that bring me joy.
Okay. You know? I just want to make sure you guys are balanced because the anxiety can definitely overtake a lot of the times, and you know, being married to Miranda and watching her grow into the human she is now, the very beginning of our relationship, she was like, it's just my anxiety. It's my anxiety. I was like, stop claiming it.
Mm-hmm.
Just stop claiming it and look at what you have and look how anxiety will prevent you from seeing what you have and not cherishing it in the moment. And I'm really proud of both of you. Like, no matter where you are in your journey of life, there's always learning to be had. And if you're willing and able and open, you can find education from anyone. And I think it's been a really beautiful thing to watch you both come together and have this conversation.
Yeah.
I still want to roll a blunt for both of y'all to get over it much faster.
No, we're going to have Tish over, and you're going to come in the back house. Yes. And you're going to maybe microdose with Raven and all.
Maybe. That's happening with turkeys on our
hands. I'll bring you guys very stomach-easy snacks.
Free cookies.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so Tish.
Yes.
On this podcast, we always go into our pot and pull out a topic.
Speaking of pot.
Speaking of pot, we have a pot here on Tea Time. Speaking of pot, it's this pot.
Tell us what we're talking about today on the podcast.
On Tea Time.
It's my favorite thing ever.
Home. Isn't that funny? We were kind of talking about home already.
We were. I was saying it was my safe space, my happy place.
Do you believe home is where the heart is?
I do. Yes, I do. Now, I love my physical home, too. Mm-hmm. It's just like I love interior design. I love, you know, and I... Not that I care if people, like I would love to be an interior designer, but I have never, I've had people help me with my house, but I do, like my house is so me. Mm-hmm. Like it's all my comfort and like, you know what, when you walk in, you see 80s hair bands everywhere.
Yeah.
Because Miley, she got me some beautiful art. Mm-hmm. Actually, after my mom passed, she wanted me to have like a happy day. So she took me to Morrison Hotel Gallery and was like, Mom, let's get all your favorite bands. And so we did that. And so it's so funny because like, I feel like you just know who lives there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know who lives there.
You did Cyrus versus Cyrus Design and Conquer.
I did. It was fun.
Yeah.
That's
hard.
Home.
Hard. We did not have a very big budget. I was up at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning putting furniture together.
But that's really into it. We tried to design a house together. Mm-hmm. Period. Nothing more to say after that.
And that worked out well.
Next question.
So what does home mean to you guys?
If you come to our house now, you'd be like, did you guys finish? We're like, nope, we're done.
That's so funny.
But what does home actually mean to you?
I would not say that home is a physical place. Mm. Because like you and your family, I've traveled so much. And I think it's my final moment with the people around me that matter. I can find home in a friend's house because I'm around Dolomite. Y'all know who you are. Or I can be in a hotel with Miranda and I'm like, oh, I love being home. The house, surprisingly, is my version of anxiety. If I stay in one place for too long, I remember all the BS that happens in there. And I'm like, oh, there was a fight there. This person got punched there. I can't be in it. You know what I mean? Kind of there. But as long as I'm with my hearts and my souls, that's home to me.
That's, but my husband's like that. Are you an Aquarius?
I'm a Sag, but I was raised by an Aquarius.
Okay. Because, I feel like he's that way as well. Mm-hmm. It's like wherever he is, as long as we're together, that's his home, you know? For me, absolutely. Like, I would not love my house and home the way I do without him in it. But there's something about the house that I've been in. And I think I've been in it, like, before my mom passed, you know, like I've just went through a lot there, which actually could be weirdly not the best energy ever. Mm. But it, for some reason, it feels like my safe place, even just the structure and it for me does, like, there's something about it. And I also think that's a Taurus thing.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
I get that. Yeah. I understand the physical space being really important. For me, my physical surroundings are extremely important because if I am in a place that doesn't feel soothing to me or familiar, I don't feel great.
That is me.
Yeah.
When I am not in my surroundings that I am comfortable in, I'm not okay.
Yeah. I say that I'm a creature of my surroundings.
Totally.
Yeah. And so therefore...
I am so like... I heard somebody
laughing.
You guys
are twins. You guys are twinsies. Well,
we are. But it's hard when you're then in an environment that you don't feel great in. But what I've started to learn, and I think what you're saying as well, is that when you have your people around you, then it's easier to kind of adapt to a new environment or to a space that isn't your home, but it's still, it takes work. It takes a level of work, and that's hard. Do you feel like home, in any definition of home, shifted for you post-divorce?
Not, I mean, in all honesty, like the last couple years, really since COVID, Billy Ray and I, he was in Nashville, I was in California. And it was the first time I'd ever lived alone in my entire life, because I went from living at home with my mom, and then I had Brandy, and I was only 20. So then I had Brandy, and then I started having kids and a husband and the whole thing. But because I was smoking marijuana, like, I honestly didn't mind it. I kind of enjoyed it. I don't know why now that being alone scares me so much, but I feel like I'm more at home, like, that with my husband now, because he, like, besides, he is definitely my safe place. Like I feel like that you guys have that. Like, definitely he's my safe place.
It's such a blessing to have people like that.
Yeah. I was talking to a therapist today, and she was like, is your partner
helping, supportive? Supporting.
Okay. Yes. And I was like, are there some that don't? And she was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She was like, most aren't. Yeah. And I was like, really? Because I'm very fortunate. I tell him it was a God thing. Like, I don't know if he made me feel safe enough to kind of start feeling everything I'm feeling. Like, maybe. And, like, I don't need to work on him at all. Like, he works on himself constantly. But he, like, honestly just, he is so good with me during all this.
I'm so happy that you have
me too.
Him. Because that, having a person, and I do think that he could be part of the reason why you are feeling some of what you're feeling.
Yeah.
Because when you feel safe, even though right now you are in this anxious place.
Yes.
Our bodies know kind of when to release things. Like, some of the worst panic attacks I ever had were in my most calm environments, because the subconscious drops the wall. And so, you know, Raven for me has been home in so many ways, because she has given me a safety that I actually never had in my physical home.
I mean, I got married when I was like 24.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I really feel like I probably, since I lived, like, I don't think I felt safe either. I did at home with my mom and dad. And I don't know if it was a feeling of not being safe as much as just, like, I had to depend on me.
Yeah.
You know, like, and not that I want to not depend on me now. I mean, of course I do. But it is really good to know when I am not in the strongest place, and I'm not some badass manager raising, like, when I am not in a good place, that I have a partner and a husband that is not running away.
Yeah.
And is, like, there.
Let me just also say, the industry that you are in, that we're all in, is not normal for our nervous system. Mm-hmm. It is a stressful, forget fright or flight or fawn, it is fright every day. It is a strenuous situation. And I am not a mother. I have one. I know mothers. And I can only imagine being young and having to take care of a life. That's another kind of stress. So it makes sense to me that you didn't feel safe until you saw the success of your kids. And I'm not talking about financially, and I'm not talking about work. I'm talking about being alive and being healthy and moving forward and being okay. That kind of success, that now you can drop it. And I say that because for Miranda and her speaking about hers, it's like she needed structure that gave her space to be free. She did not have to fight for her right to feel needed or wanted or seen. You are married, you are seen. And, you know, I love my wife, but she's like, at the very beginning of the relationship, she's like a little toddler in water. It's like, calm down. No, no, no. You're safe. I'm like, you're safe. Just sit down.
But when you have abandonment issues and trust issues, it's just so difficult.
My abandonment issues are insane.
Yeah, mine are too.
It's so not okay.
Yeah.
And I was the same way when I met Dom. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah, and he's helping you ground and heal and work through.
Completely. And I didn't know how to communicate at all. Like, that wasn't a thing, communication.
Did you start therapy rather recently?
I did on my own. And Dom, actually, he has a great therapist that he's gone to for 15 years, once a month. Mm-hmm. He goes.
Little tune-ups.
And, like, he saw a lot of this in me when we first met about the biggest thing was the abandonment issues. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I want you to come with me to therapy. Mm. And literally 2 to 3 weeks in, we went to which the news outlets love to make a bad thing. No. There was nothing wrong. Like, literally, he loves his therapist. He's like his mentor. And he was like, I think you should come with me. Like, I think it'd make you feel good to have someone to talk to. And that was really the first time I'd really done therapy. Mm. And then I was like, oh, I get it now. Like, yeah. It's so important.
Well,
so important.
I just want to say to the news outlets that are twisting that a man who meets you, who understands and is proactive enough at 3.5 months in, whatever, to say, we should sit down and have a conversation, is actually someone who I think is like green flag, green flag, green flag. Oh. Because that means he's emotionally intelligent. He's also emotionally connected to himself. Yes. He also saw something in you that he knew he either A, couldn't handle or couldn't fix and that you needed support in, and took you somewhere where you could work it out. And in that moment, he was showing you how committed he was to you, to be quite frank. So no one should twist that shit.
Well,
because
they did. And it made me so unfortunate. That because yeah. It was such a beautiful thing.
It is. It's really generous,
it
actually.
It was so generous. And he was like, listen, you've been married a long time. He knew, like, you lost your mom. You've met me, and, you know, we want to move forward. And, like, you have things. Mm-hmm. And, like, I need to know how to help you move this way. Absolutely. And how to, like, help you, like, get over those things. And it was so, like, eye-opening.
Yes.
About who he was.
And it's a gift because, in a way, what that is setting you up for is to find your internal home, which is what we're all seeking. Totally. In one way or another, is to feel at home in ourselves, in our bodies, and therefore we're safe everywhere, because home is a representation of safety for a lot of us. For others of us, it's really not. But for those who understand that meaning of home or have that connection, you want that within yourself. I have a question for both of you. What is an object in your home that has moved with you every time you've moved?
I got the answers.
I've got one funny one, but it's not mine. It's something Miley's taken with her. It's hilarious. So the house that I live in now, it's the too long of a story to tell, but at one time Miley owned the house. I bought it from her.
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. And it had a black toilet in there. And I was rearranging and redoing the bathroom and getting rid of the black toilet. And Miley was moving at the same time. And she was like, you're getting rid of the family throne? I was like, yes, I am. And she was like, you can't. And I was like, I'm not having the black toilet anymore. So she said, I'm keeping it. It's moved 3 times.
Oh, wow. Not the toilet. That's crazy.
Family. Oh, my gosh. And she said, I'm going to have a bronze plaque put on the top that says the family throne.
She should.
We
she
really should.
The Cyrus throne.
It's so
go.
Funny.
That's hilarious.
What's yours, babe?
I have traveled with my stone collection since I moved out of my parents' house. I have the same selenite and, goodness gracious, amethysts and citrine. And it's right now, it's in outside charging in the new house or whatever. And I also have traveled, I'm saying that, but I have to say another one. I also traveled with my wood pieces. Mm-hmm. The very first place that I moved out was in Toluca Lake. And I went to a place called Bodea Designs and I bought furniture. I love that place, right?
More than anything.
I bought beautiful, beautiful teak wood bookshelves and furniture. Yes. And it's traveled with me everywhere. And then I got married. And my wife said she didn't like it. And I said, okay, so how am I going to make this work? So I found a woodworker and we dismantled all the wood and she remade it into something else that my wife likes. And I will move with that wood everywhere. Sweet. Again, wood is porous to me. I look at it, even though I've had so many issues around that wood and that bookshelf has seen so many people, it doesn't feel bad to me. Mm. It feels like home. So when you come to the house, you'll go to the back house, which is my space. It just has a vibe back there that people really do feel like, oh, this feels nice back there. And it feels like home.
I love that.
Yeah.
What about you, babes?
Nothing.
Nothing, because she throws everything away every time she moves. It's crazy.
I do. It's crazy. I do a lot. Yeah. I'm not a, sentimental.
Me either.
Keeping stuff.
Oh, I have to keep
it. I'm sentimental with a few things, my grandmother's necklace will always come with me. But when it comes to physical objects in a home, now I think, when we move from this house, there will be things. Our dining room table.
Bring it, I'm going to bring that shit.
Our coffee table is this gorgeous.
Definitely going to bring that too. I don't care what she's saying.
And found this slab and cut it, and it's beautiful, and it's pink, and it's, that is almost an art piece. I have things now that I think will move with us.
Yes.
But when it comes.
What about your grandma's teapot?
Yeah, I guess my grandma's teapot, but that hasn't seen. Well, I guess I'd see in a couple places. No, I'm just trying to think, even from when I moved out of my parents' house into a first apartment, there's nothing that I can think of that I still have.
Wow. She doesn't attach to physical things. She attaches emotionally to the friendship of the human.
Yeah. I'm I need the being. I need the whole body. That's what I'm attached to. It's called codependency.
Yes, it is.
And we're working on it in our therapy, Tish and I.
We are.
You guys, let's toast.
Let's toast.
Cheers.
Oh, shit.
I always feel so much better after we talk.
Okay, so everyone can get back to their Thanksgiving spreads.
Yes.
We're going to quickly go through the toast today.
Right.
Today, we're toasting to Lily Gladstone.
What up, Lily Gladstone?
Lily Gladstone is a Native American actress and advocate.
Yes.
Through her powerful performances and her incredible work, Lily continues to uplift Indigenous and Native voices. Hey, her latest feature, Bring Them Home, is a documentary film that tells the powerful, urgent story of the Blackfeat Nation's decades-long effort to return wild buffalo.
In me.
To their ancestral lands, and with them, a critical part of Blackfeat identity, spirituality, and
sovereignty.
Freedom. I can read, I swear. She reminds us that storytelling can be both art and activism, a way to honor heritage, spark conversation, and inspire change.
Lily Gladstone, first of all, thank you so much. It's very important that we remember that this country had buffalo.
I know, right?
We were rich in culture, and then something came and killed it all. Anyway, we're not going to talk
about the white man. John Smith.
Here as we sit with turkeys on
our
hands.
Yeah, this is the worst.
No, but no. This is exactly what my wife has this thing. She's like, what is your holidays? Thanksgiving for me is very, very touchy. Because in some cultures, you eat, you forget. You forget what happened to the people that took care of this land. You forget what we have done, and we cannot forget. You cannot cover it up with dressing and cranberry sauce. You have to remember it. So before you eat, before you sit down, you get your fork and knife and you give thanks to the people at your table, give thanks to the souls that made today possible. Some of them were lost. A lot of them were lost. And I want to thank Lily. Sorry, I go off on a tangent after these.
I literally have such a passion for the Indigenous people. And for the longest time, it didn't happen, a documentary. But I was working on a documentary with some amazing Indigenous women. Because it's crazy, the statistics of between here and Lake Tahoe, of how many Indigenous women go missing or are murdered.
Yes.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. And, on the reservations, there's not even enough, some of them don't even have addresses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, they can't be identified properly and all these things. And so I'm so glad you mentioned this, because I've always had, such a passion for helping these women and to tell their stories. It's something I still am so passionate about.
Yeah.
And I know I got some Native American in my blood. I feel it in my cheekbones. I feel it in my witchery of it all.
Totally.
I feel it in the fact that you don't have to tell me to touch grass. I'm out here barefoot, naked in Texas. What you say?
Howling at the moon.
Love
it.
Yeah.
Where can everyone find you?
Tish Cyrus Purcell on Instagram. And I think that's on my... am I Tish Cyrus Purcell on TikTok?
Yeah. Plug the pod though.
Oh, yeah. And I love doing my podcast with my daughter Brandy. It's called Sorry We're Cyrus.
Love that pod.
And you can find us on Instagram as well. So
it's a great podcast.
Well, oh, yeah. My episode's coming up, you guys.
Yes.
Yay. We had good conversations.
We do.
Yes, we
do. That was a great, episode you guys did.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. No, thank you so much for being the soulmate my wife needed today.
Yeah.
I know.
My sister.
I feel like we might need our own mental health podcast.
Let's do it. Like, I love it.
Because I think for me personally, I actually would love to do something like that. Because like every time I talk to you, seriously, I feel so much less alone in it.
Oh my gosh, we should really talk about it because I want a spinoff podcast that is just me.
Yeah.
Again, everyone, thank you so much for watching Tea Time with Raven and Miranda. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and hit that bell for notifications. And put down in the comments how you feel about your anxiety, what you ate today on Thanksgiving, and if you are a chunky cranberry or a creamy cranberry sauce.
Because
smooth
all the way, baby.
Hashtag smooth. We like it.
Hashy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving,
Happy
everybody.
Thanksgiving, everyone.
Wait, let's say one thing we're grateful for.
Oh.
In Thanksgiving, just really quick, rapid fire.
Okay, go.
One thing you're grateful for.
No, me? I don't know. Good go.
Family and friends.
Beautiful.
My wife.
I'm grateful for these titties. All right, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
Titties.
I'm dead.